I'm going to do something a little different tonight. I am not going to do the questions by rows and in order. So part of being the teacher is you can make up your own questions. But what I would appreciate from you, though, is when you see the question up there, that's your cue to comment. It's amazing, though, when you have, two chapters to cover and you make your own questions up, they really do kind of line up with what's in the book. But I think as we go through these things, I believe you'll see that we do cover a few things that are a little bit different. So last week, the Israelites were in the wilderness of Sin. So they're on their way to Mount Sinai, and we know why they're going there, right? Who said they'd be there? Yeah, God told Moses that's a sign that was going to come true. So the people would worship him there. All right, question one. Where did the Israelites go from the wilderness of Sin? Where did they head from there? Right. I chose to put Numbers 33 in there. You remember we talked about that Moses, God had told Moses to write down the stops that they had on the way. And they set out from the wilderness of Sin and camped at Dophka. Then they set out from Dophka and camped at Alush. And then they set out from there and camped at Rephidim. I have a couple of maps here that I thought were pretty interesting. And take this map and go counterclockwise with it about one turn. And what you've got is you've got the Red Sea there at the bottom. And as we've said before, nobody really knows exactly where Dophka was and Alush was. But maybe some of you have used some resources off that website there, thebible.ca. And from all I can see, it's all of it's very scriptural. Now, this is based apparently on this particular route, based on a lot of archaeological finds and that sort of thing. And I really have put this here just because the route is overlaid on the terrain. And I think that's very important when we talk about that number of people, maybe upwards of 2 million people or more, having to move through there. So if you can see the arrows there, it's a little bit faint, but you can kind of see where he indicates that he believes that they had crossed right there at the Straits of Tehran and then moved around through the wilderness of Sin and then moved this direction. This next one is really the reason that I put this up here is because it's a little bit more close up. And if you look, they're moving this direction. But some of the commentaries that I read seem to indicate that it was a possibility that the reason that they moved in stages may not have reference to these are just the stops that were made, but because of the difficult terrain. And if you'll see the mountain ranges there and where they had to go through there, if that was indeed the place. I just thought that was interesting, and it kind of gives you a little bit more of a flavor of exactly the terrain that they had and the wilderness area that they were in. Question two, what did the Israelites grumble with Moses about? And if you look at the terrain, they certainly would have. There's not a lot there, they demanded it that Moses again provide some. Verse 2 says that Moses' response was to question them. He says, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord?" What did they say that was similar to something they said before?
Really,
Yeah, they certainly didn't seem to remember what he had done for them before. And did they have it so good? What was the purpose of them being brought out of Egypt in the first place? Yeah, that's exactly why they were brought out there. All right, question three. What did Moses ask the Lord? Yeah. How serious was that complaining to Moses? What else did he say? Yeah, now that gives you some idea exactly the mood of those Israelites if Moses would say something like that. So very contentious. So despite the fact that God has previously provided not only water but also food for him as well, they still don't truly trust God to provide. I thought it was interesting that you'll remember this. The same sort of situation happened 40 years later at Kadesh Barnea. Numbers 20, verses 2 and 3, if you want to look at that. But you'll remember this is the time when Moses struck the rock instead of speaking to it as God commanded him to. So, all those years later, they're still complaining about lack of water and not trusting God to provide. How does Moses, and maybe you have to read my mind here, how does Moses demonstrate his faith in the Lord? Well, right. Yeah, he's the one, he goes to the Lord for an answer. So, this idea of them testing the Lord, I believe your class book said something about that. What's the idea there behind them testing the Lord?
Complaining?
Yeah, they complained, but what were they, what kind of question were they asking? Truly. Yeah, is God with us or is He not with us? Should they have known this in some very powerful ways? You know, after all, they had seen the plagues. They were spared from some of the plagues that the Egyptians had put on them. They were led out from Egypt. We talked a couple weeks ago about the powerful scene there at the Red Sea when they crossed there. He provided not only water, but he provided food. He provided the quail exactly when they needed it, right? So all of these things that they have seen, you know, that they certainly should have known that God was with them. Well, that's a good point.
So I think the testing was that they weren't going to allow God to work things out on His schedule. So the modern-day application for us is God knows our needs. God has demonstrated that He will provide for our needs, and yet we complain.
He's going to provide on His timetable.
Yeah.
Good point. Anything else? I thought this was interesting as well. Over in Psalm 78:15, it sort of discusses the situation there and you know God's reaction. He split rocks in the wilderness and gave them drink abundantly as from the deep. He made streams come out of the rock and caused waters to flow down like rivers. Yet they sinned still more against Him, rebelling against the Most High in the desert. They tested God in their heart by demanding the food they craved. They spoke against God, saying, "Can God spread a table in the wilderness? He struck the rock so that water gushed out and streams overflowed. Can He also give bread or provide meat for His people?" Therefore, when the Lord heard, He was full of wrath. A fire was kindled against Jacob. His anger rose against Israel because they did not believe in God and did not trust His saving power. And then over in Deuteronomy, the sixth chapter, you know, when Moses is telling him, "You shall not put the Lord God to the test as you tested Him at Massah." So that was something that continued to be brought back up to them.
There's a passage there, Psalms talks about he made streams come out of the rock, all the water to flow down like
people and livestock. In connection with what you're talking about, that I've often thought, if there were how many eyewitnesses that were not Israelites to this? You know, in other words, if there were other people around and they knew the arid land that it was, and they saw all these people, and you know good and well that there was fear of so many people using all of the resources and that kind of thing. So they knew all these people were out there, but if they knew the land that they were in, and then somehow this eyewitness, they were able to see all of this water come out and then water all the livestock and provide water for all the people. You know, what must that have been like to see? You know, I think you're right. It must have been a tremendous, tremendous thing to see.
But how human is it when you don't have a long history of something happening for you? They didn't have a long history of this. Yes, a lot of it takes faith as we review it and look at it. But even with us, we many times have to have years of experience. Because what we deal with many times is what's right there before us. I'm in a fix right now. I'm not thinking about what happened the day before yesterday, how I was taken out of a fix. I'm in a fix right now. So I focus on that. Many times we as Christians get a history of how God provides for us over years and in different circumstances.
Well, it is obvious that when you look back, you can see when you did have a need, He provided for it. He may not have provided for it the way that you wanted Him to, but He certainly provided for that need. Yeah, that's exactly right. All right, who was with Moses when he went to provide water? Right. Yeah. Pass on before the people, taking with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand the staff of which you struck the Nile, and go. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock at Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and water shall come out of it, and the people will drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. That word Horeb there, did you have a reference in your Bible to talk about that? Because I had to look that one up. And mine said that it was another name for Sinai, Mount Sinai. Anybody of you see that? Not sure. I thought that was interesting. So why would it be a good idea, aside from the fact that God told them to do it, why would maybe it have been a good idea to have the elders there?
So that they could testify of the miraculous nature of
their health. Yeah, because it apparently, and correct me if you think it was different, but apparently this was some distance away from where they were because he had to go there. And I agree with you, Bob. I think it was that they could come back and say, look, this didn't just happen in some natural way. This was truly God providing, and this is exactly how that happened.
And the elders would be believed much more so than just a couple of common guys tagged along to witness.
Right, and what they would have reported back to the people is that there was no water, and then after Moses strikes with his rod, the same one that he struck the Nile with, after he strikes that rock, then there was water. Now, there wasn't water before that. We went exactly where God told us to go, and he struck the rock, and that's exactly what happened. To your point, Chad, back to Psalm 78, he brought forth streams, not just a little bit of water. So that was a lot of water. Yeah, I mean, if that requires probably a lot of faith. Maybe if you were walking up toward Horeb to where God told you to go, and you're looking around, maybe you're doubting yourself. Well, there didn't really seem to be any possibility of any water here. It sure looks like a desert area to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure, you know, we don't know every little bitty detail about this, but there's a reason that God took him to exactly where he took him, I'm sure. Right. Yep, good point. All right, question 5. What did Moses call the place where water was provided? Yeah, why did he say that? Quarreled and tested. And boy, if you're Moses and they start quarreling with you again, you're thinking, what in the world? What do you people have to see before you believe that things will be provided for you? Psalms 95, verse 7, For he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture and the sheep of his hand. Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as at Meribah, as on the day at Massah in the wilderness, when your fathers put me to the test and put me to the proof, though they had seen my work. For 40 years I loathed that generation and said, they are my people who go astray in their heart, and they have not known my ways. Therefore I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. So, it just gives you a little bit more of the way he felt about that. And then Numbers 14 and 22 there. None of the men who have seen my glory and my signs that I did in Egypt and in the wilderness and yet have put me to the test these 10 times and have not obeyed my voice shall see the land that I swore to give to their fathers, and none of those who despise me shall see it. And I often thought, if you were there as an Israelite, and then somehow or another you could foresee the future, and you knew what else was coming, and you knew the fact that you wouldn't be able to see the promised land because of all that had happened and the things that they had done, I just wonder if you could handle it. You know, you've got so much that happens between now and then. So while they're at Rephidim, they were attacked by the Amalekites. And Deuteronomy 25, 17 and 18, which I believe was also in the book, gives a little bit more detail there. And it says, remember that what Amalek did to you on the way as you came out of Egypt, how he attacked you on the way when you were faint and weary and cut off your tail, those who were lagging behind you, and he did not fear God. So the weak and the stragglers or whatever it was, you know, at the back of the column or at least on the fringes of the column, and if you'll recall the map that we looked at, and we talked about it, that there may have been a possibility that they were going by stages because of the terrain and things like that. You can think of how easy it might be to sort of pick off some of those groups as they did that. So we don't know, just something to think about. Right. And think about this as we look at the next couple of questions. Were these soldiers that he took out of Egypt? I can just imagine the condition that they were in because they had been worked so hard as slaves, and then now he's brought them out, and now they've gone the distance that they have through the wilderness. This is clearly God fighting for his people. You know, he took them out of Egypt. He provided for them with food and water, and now he's going to fight for them as well. Let's see. Question 6. Who did Moses choose to lead Israel into battle? Right. And really, this is the first time, I think, that we've seen Joshua mentioned. Verse 9, so Moses said to Joshua, choose for us men and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand. So you'd think if Joshua knew that the staff that he had was the one that he parted the Red Sea with and the one that he got water out of the rock, that'd be something that would give me a little confidence if I'm Joshua. I'm saying, you know what, I think this may turn out pretty well. Otherwise, I might have been thinking, we don't have any soldiers to go out and fight. I don't know how we're going to do this. But he certainly did what he was asked. So the same staff of God, same language, staff of God, is used like it was in Exodus 4 and 20. Right. Yep. Yeah, we'll learn a lot about Joshua. Well, as we have said so many times, we're not provided with every single detail here, but obviously God is the one who told Moses, no, this is what you need to do. You need to go to the top of the hill and you need to go with the staff that I gave you. Right, so question 7, who accompanied Moses to the hilltop and why? Yeah. Yeah, who is her, do we know? You know, I had to look that up. He's mentioned again in 24 and 14. Where it says, Aaron and Hur are with you. Whoever has a legal matter, let him approach them. So, certainly somebody that Moses could count on. He's mentioned again in 31:2 as the grandfather of Bezalel, a builder of the tabernacle. 1 Chronicles 2, 3, and 5, and 18 and 20 mention him again, but we don't know at that point if it's the same person or not. So I just thought that was interesting. So Joshua did as Moses told him, fought with Amalek, while Moses, Aaron, and Hur go to the top of the hill. And as Lamar said, whenever Moses' hands were raised, what happened? Right. So I can imagine, you know, if you had to hold your hand up by yourself like that, and we're about to talk about maybe how long that was. It'd be tough. And then so when his arm went down, they started to lose. How long do you think the battle was?
All day.
How do we know that? Well, but that was, I think, a little more piece of the puzzle there is when he says, tomorrow, this is what's going to happen. And then the battle lasts until the sun went down. So if you're there and you're fighting in battle with the Amalekites, how important do you think it would be to be able to look up there and see Moses and see his hand raised and the staff in his hand? If you knew what that staff had already done for you, you know? Again, these aren't soldiers. This is God fighting for them. And that is something that he wanted to teach them. It's not just happenstance that this is going on. This is God's power that's making this happen. All right, question 8. How was this battle to be memorialized? Yep, write this as a memorial in a book and recite it in the ears of Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. And Moses built an altar and called the name of it, the Lord is my banner, saying, a hand upon the throne of the Lord. The Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. this mention of the Amalekites' destruction... sure if I've got that. Yeah. Numbers 24, then he looked on Amalek and took up his discourse and said, Amalek was the first among the nations, but its end is utter destruction. This is Balaam's first discourse here. And then fulfilled centuries later. You remember what happened in 1 Samuel 15 with Saul?
He did an incomplete job.
Yeah, he didn't quite get the job done. What did he do to not get it done? What did he spare? Yeah, he was told to wipe them out entirely, but he didn't. Mentioned after that, 1 Chronicles 4 and 43 with Hezekiah, but never mentioned again after that. So that's exactly what happened. What God said was going to happen, happened. All right? As we move into chapter 18, we see Moses' father-in-law and his wife and sons again. And you'll remember that he had sent Zipporah away back in Exodus, the 4th chapter, around the 24th verse, and possibly about 6 months or more. So this separation had been about that long. So what had Jethro heard about? What had Jethro heard about? Yeah. And again, he's called the priest of Midian. He heard all that God had done for Moses and for Israel, his people, how the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt. We saw back in chapter 15 and verse 14 and the verses following that the deliverance of the Israelites from Egypt was widely known in all the nations around Egypt. But notice that in all of the word-of-mouth reports, who gets the credit? Is it Moses or God? Yeah, obviously God gets the credit there. So human nature, like you were talking about, Adele, we might, if you weren't paying too close of attention, you might want to say, you know, Moses is a pretty great man. He led the Israelites out of Egypt and he did this and he did that. But God is the one who is certainly getting the credit here. Down in Midian, and then he went back up. That's right. Question 10, where did Jethro meet Moses? Where did he meet him? Verse 5. Mountain of God, in other words, where was that? What's the mountain of God? Sinai. Yeah, so they finally have reached Mount Sinai. And if you look at the text there, I thought it was striking that Moses shows such great respect for his father-in-law. You know, they talk with each other about how they were doing, and Moses, as you can imagine, begins telling him all the things that God had done to Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for the sake of his people. He tells them all about the hardship that they've had all along the way and how God provided each step of the way. And so Jethro rejoices in verse 9. He says he rejoiced for all the good that the Lord had done to Israel in that he had delivered them from the hands of the Egyptians. And he says further there, he declared that now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods because in this affair they dealt arrogantly with the people. That's in verse 11. So, in other words, it seems to me what he's saying there is the Egyptians claimed their gods could do all these great things and they couldn't. But what would you think he would already think of God if he's described as a priest of Midian? Yeah, he would know who God was to a certain extent. He would know that he wasn't equal with the little g gods, right? Yeah. but I think what he's doing here is he's just really declaring that emphatically. What service did Jethro do after this? What did he do? Right.
And then he gave him some of that good advice later.
Yeah, he, as you talked about, he, Jethro brought the burnt offering and sacrifices to God. Then Aaron comes with all the elders of Israel to eat bread with Moses' father-in-law before God. So, we've said before, we just really don't know anything about the... We know sacrifices were offered, but we don't know... And we know, obviously, faith was involved previously, right? They had to have faith, so faith was involved. But we really don't know all the particulars about that. Because it's not important to us. We are about to find out exactly the laws that he will lay down. So, you know, when you think about offerings or sacrifices being done, you know, we read about Abel and Noah and Abraham and others, but we just don't know about some of those things. What did Jethro witness Moses doing, and what was the problem? It's an awful lot of people and an awful lot of problems going on. There at verse 13, the next day Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood around Moses from morning till evening. And if you've managed people before, you can just imagine some of the issues that might have come up just routinely, not to mention some of the other hairier issues that could come about. When Moses' father-in-law saw all he was doing for the people, he said, What is this that you're doing for the people? Why do you sit alone and all the people stand around you from morning till evening? And Moses says to him, because the people come to me to inquire of God. When they have a dispute, they come to me and I decide between one person and another, and I make them know the statutes of God and His laws. Well, he didn't really have any of that yet, did he? Hadn't been delivered to him, right? We'll talk about that here in just a second. Moses' father-in-law said to him, what you are doing is not good. You and the people with you will certainly wear yourselves out, for the thing is too heavy for you. You're not able to do it alone. I think this is a good example of Numbers 9 and verse 6. This is probably a good example of what some of the things that he did ask of God. And there were certain men who were unclean through touching a dead body, so that they could not keep the Passover on that day. And they came before Moses and Aaron on that day. And those men said to him, we are unclean through touching a dead body. Why are we kept from bringing the Lord's offering at its appointed time among the people of Israel? And Moses said to them, wait, that I may hear what the Lord will command concerning you. Now, it had already been delivered at this point, but there was a gray area here or something that was just a little bit unique that he needed to go to God for. And I just thought it was a good example of Moses, you know, not doing what he thought was best, but going straight back to God. Hey, Dale?
So, if man has law, before their law was given?
There was obviously some, but we don't know.
If you do otherwise, there would be no expression of what sin was.
Well, well, I guess what I'm saying is not in the same way that he's going to, but you're right. Yeah. And I just thought this was a good comment here by Moses, Numbers 11. I'm not able to carry all these people alone. The burden is too heavy for me. If you treat me like this, kill me at once. If I find favor in your sight, that I may not see my wretchedness. You remember that situation where he says that, and just you can just see how he felt about that. All right, question 13. What did Jethro say should be done? Yeah, delegation. Nothing wrong with delegation. Delegation can be very, very efficient. Now, obey my voice. I'll give you advice, and God be with you. You shall represent the people before God and bring their cases to God, and you shall warn them about the statutes and the laws and make them know the way in which they must walk and what they must do. Moreover, look for able men from all the people, men who fear God, who are trustworthy and hate a bribe, and place such men over the people as chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. And let them judge the people at all times. Every great matter they shall bring to you, but any small matter they shall decide themselves. So it will be easier for you, and they will bear the burden with you. If you do this, God will direct you. You will be able to endure, and all this people also will go to their place in peace. So he saw that this was something, really, that should be done. Now, if you look at over at Deuteronomy, the first chapter, the first four chapters of Deuteronomy is where Moses is given this speech to the Israelites and saying, all right, this is what has happened over this past 40 years. Let me just remind you of all this, and then let me tell you what you need to do. So really, I believe what he's doing is he's recapping exactly what happened there. He reminds them, at that time I said to you, I'm not able to bear you by myself. The Lord your God has multiplied you, and behold, you are today as numerous as the stars of heaven. May the Lord, the God of your fathers, make you 1,000 times as many as you are, and bless you as he has promised you. How can I bear by myself the weight and burden of you and your strife? Choose for your tribes wise, understanding, and experienced men, and I will appoint them as your heads. And you answered me, the thing that you have spoken is good for us to do. So I took the heads of your tribes, wise and experienced men, and set them as heads over you, and so forth. Now, in fairness, I suppose what this could be talking about is, in Numbers 11, it talks about appointing elders also, and it could be talking about that as well. But I thought that may be a pretty good little recap here. What type of men did he say should be chosen? You remember that? Yeah, able men was one of them. Men of ability, those that fear God, men of truth, and I think it said also those who hate a bribe, those that were not covetous. I just wonder if how many fit the bill. How many right off the bat fit the bill of those? Well, look, I can immediately think of this many that, fulfill all four of those. Or if we had to say, this one's good here, but he may not be so good here. So I just think that's you talk about your human nature. So, all right, any questions about any of that? Any comments? Yeah, they would have known the difference at that point.
These men that were appointed, if I understand verse 20 there, Moses had a responsibility then to teach these people. Teach them orderliness, laws, show them the way wherein they must walk, the word that they must do. So it wasn't he appointed them and sat down and just waited for them to bring the weighty matters to him. He had an ongoing responsibility to them.
Yeah. Yeah, and I thought I had a note down here because I remember looking at that. Moses had certain responsibilities. He continued to do the same things. I mean, when something really needed to go to God, he was the one who went to God about it. So he didn't just wash his hands of that. Anything else? All right.